In 1956, I finally got a brother, and our family finally got a television set. My brother, Roger Cassidy Clinton, was born on July 25th, his father's birthday. I was so happy. Mother and Daddy had been trying to have a baby for some time. A couple of years earlier, she'd had a miscarriage. I think she, and probably he too, thought it might save their marriage. Daddy's response was not auspicious. I was with Mama and Papa when Mother delivered by cesarean section. Daddy picked me up and took me to see her, then brought me home and left. He'd been drinking for the last few months, and instead of making him feel happy and responsible, the birth of his only son prompted him to run back to the bottle. In 1957, my grandfather's lungs finally gave out. He died in the relatively new Ouachita Hospital, where Mother worked. He was only 56 years old. Too much of his life had been occupied with economic woes, health problems, and marital strife. Yet he always found things to enjoy in the face of his adversity, and he loved Mother and me more than life. His love and the things he taught me, mostly by example, including appreciation for the gifts of daily life and the problems of other people, made me better than I could have been without him. I started the 1958-59 school year at the junior high school. It brought a whole new set of experiences and challenges as I began to learn more about my mind, my body, my spirit, and my little world. I liked most of what I learned about myself, but not all of it. And some of what came into my head and life scared the living hell out of me, including anger at Daddy, the first stirrings of sexual feelings toward girls, and doubts about my religious convictions, which I think developed because I couldn't understand why a God whose existence I couldn't prove would create a world in which so many bad things happened. My interest in music grew. I was now going to junior high band practices every day and looking forward to marching at football games, halftimes, and in the Christmas parade, to the concerts and to the regional and state band festivals at which judges graded the bands as well as solo and ensemble performances. I won a fair number of medals in junior high, and when I didn't do so well, it was invariably because I tried to perform a piece that was too difficult for me. I still have some of the judges' rating sheets on my early solos, pointing out my poor control in the lower register, bad phrasing, and puffy cheeks. The ratings got better when I grew older, but I never quite cured the puffy cheeks. I needed all the help I could get in understanding people in junior high school. It was there that I had to face the fact that I was not destined to be liked by everyone, usually for reasons I couldn't figure out. Once, when I was walking to school and was about a block away, an older student, one of the town hoods, who was standing in the gap between two buildings smoking a cigarette, flicked the burning weed at me, hitting the bridge of my nose and nearly burning my eye. I never did figure out why he did it, but after all, I was a fat band boy who didn't wear cool jeans. Levi's, preferably with the stitching on the back pockets removed. Around that same time, I got into an argument about something or other with Clifton Bryant, a boy who was a year or so older, but smaller than I was. One day, my friends and I decided to walk home from school about 3 miles. Clifton lived in the same end of town, and he followed us home, taunting me and hitting me on the back and shoulders over and over. I tried to ignore him. We walked like that all the way up Central Avenue to the fountain and the right turn to Park Avenue for more than a mile. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I turned, took a big swing, and hit him. It was a good blow, but by the time it landed, he had already turned to run away, so it caught him only in the back. As I said, I was slow. When Clifton ran away home, I yelled at him to come back and fight like a man. He kept on going. By the time I got home, I had calmed down, and the attaboys I got from my buddies had worn off. I was afraid I might have hurt him, so I made Mother call his house to make sure he was okay. We never had any trouble after that. I had learned I could defend myself, but I hadn't enjoyed hurting him, and I was a little disturbed by my anger, the currents of which would prove deeper and stronger in the years ahead. I now know that my anger on that day was a normal and healthy response to the way I'd been treated. But because of the way Daddy behaved when he was angry and drunk, I associated anger with being out of control, and I was determined not to lose control. Doing so could unleash the deeper, constant anger I kept locked away, because I didn't know where it came from. One night when I was 14 and my brother was only 4, Daddy closed the door to his bedroom, started screaming at Mother, then began to hit her. Little Roger was scared, just as I had been 9 years earlier on the night of the gunshot. Finally, I couldn't bear the thought of Mother being hurt and Roger being frightened anymore. I grabbed a golf club out of my bag and threw open their door. Mother was on the floor and Daddy was standing over her, beating on her. I told him to stop and said that if he didn't, I was going to beat the hell out of him with a golf club. He just caved, sitting down in a chair next to the bed and hanging his head. It made me sick. In her book, Mother says she called the police and had Daddy taken to jail for the night. I don't remember that, but I do know we didn't have any more trouble for a good while. I suppose I was proud of myself for standing up for Mother, but afterward I was sad about it, too. I just couldn't accept the fact that a basically good person would try to make his own pain go away by hurting someone else. I wish I'd had someone to talk with about all this, but I didn't, so I had to figure it out for myself. I came to accept the secrets of our house as a normal part of my life. I never talked to anyone about them, not a friend, a neighbor, a teacher, a pastor. Many years later, when I ran for president, several of my friends told reporters they never knew. Of course, as with most secrets, some people did know. Daddy couldn't be on good behavior with everyone but us, though he tried. Whoever else knew, family members, mother's close friends, a couple of policemen, didn't mention it to me. So I thought I had a real secret and kept quiet about it. Our family policy was don't ask, don't tell. When I was 15, Daddy started drinking and behaving violently again. So Mother took Roger and me away. We had done it once before a couple of years earlier when we moved for a few weeks into the Cleveland Manor Apartments on the south end of Central Avenue. This time, in April 1962, we stayed about 3 weeks at a motel while Mother searched for a house. Finally, she settled on a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house on Scully Street. It was one of the new all-electric gold medallion houses with central heat and air. We had window unit air conditioners back on Park Avenue, and I think it cost $30,000. 5 days after we left, on April 14, 1962, Mother filed for divorce. Divorce can happen quickly in Arkansas, and she certainly had grounds. But it wasn't over. Daddy was desperate to get her and us back. He fell apart, lost a lot of weight, parked for hours near our house, even slept on our concrete front porch a couple of times. One day he asked me to take a ride with him. We drove up behind our old house on Circle Drive. He stopped at the bottom of our back driveway. He was a wreck. He hadn't shaved in 3 or 4 days, though I don't think he'd been drinking. He told me he couldn't live without us, that he had nothing else to live for. He cried. He begged me to talk to Mother and ask her to take him back. He said he would straighten up and never hit her or scream at her again. When he said it, he really believed it, but I didn't. He never understood or accepted the cause of his problem. He never acknowledged that he was powerless in the face of liquor and that he couldn't quit all by himself. Meanwhile, his entreaties were beginning to get to Mother. I think she was feeling a little uncertain about her ability to take care of us financially. She didn't make really good money until Medicaid and Medicare were enacted a couple of years later. Even more important was her old-school view that divorce, especially with kids in the house, was a bad thing, which it often is if there's no real abuse. I think she also felt that their problems must be partly her fault. And she probably did trigger his insecurities. After all, she was a good-looking, interesting woman who liked men and worked with a lot of attractive ones who were more successful than her husband. After we'd been on Scully Street just a few months, and the divorce had been finalized, Mother told Roger and me that we needed a man in the house, and that she would always feel guilty if she didn't give him another chance. So she did. They remarried, which, given the way Daddy's life played out, was good for him, but not so good for Roger or for her. I don't know what effect it had on me, except that later when he got ill, I was very glad to be able to share his last months. High school was a great ride, but it bothered me that Hot Springs schools still weren't integrated. The black kids still went to Langston High School, which claimed as its most famous alumnus the legendary Washington Redskins back Bobby Mitchell. I followed the civil rights movement on the evening news in our daily paper, the Sentinel Record, along with Cold War events like the U-2 incident with Francis Gary Powers and the Bay of Pigs. I can still see Castro riding into Havana at the head of his ragtag but victorious army. But as with most kids, politics took a back seat to daily life. And apart from Daddy's occasional relapses, I liked my life a lot. It was in high school that I really fell in love with music. Classical, jazz, and band music joined rock and roll, swing, and gospel as my idea of pure joy. For some reason, I really didn't get into country and western until I was in my 20s, when Hank Williams and Patsy Cline reached down to me from heaven.